Blog Talk Radio.
I can remember. I hate you, and I wish you both had cancer.
Cancer?
Yes, in the head.
I'm as tired as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Tell me, you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
People seem to like me because I am polite and I'm rarely late.
And now the host of the Stupid Cancer Show, Matthew Zachary.
Monday, April 20th, and we're once again live on the Stupid Cancer Show, the voice of young adults with cancer. We are your friendly neighborhood weekly social webcast, finally giving that voice to nearly 5 million young adults affected by cancer. This broadcast is a program of the I'm Too Young for This Cancer Foundation, a national leader in the fight against cancer, working exclusively on behalf of survivors and their care providers under the age of 40. Got cancer under 40? Sucks, huh? Well, get busy living because the Stupid Cancer Show is on the air. Welcome to tonight's broadcast, my friends. We are here to change the world, one chemo infusion at a time, and share all of our collective crapness. Now, call me a hippie, but do not call me a victim, because I don't believe that change is possible if you never disrupt and challenge the status quo. I am still here, you are still here, and this is why we fight. Forget the cure, my friends. That's right, you heard it here first. Forget the cure. Survivorship is all that matters. So welcome, my friends, to the Stupid Cancer Movement, because we're here to stay, and the couch is comfy. You see, here in Stupid Cancer Land, we're not just about the quantity of your life, we're about the quality, too. Why? Because there's more to the cure than just research. The need to cure cancer for Gen X and Gen Y, whatever that means, is only going to come from within our own ranks. Are we on our own? Well, I say that if we're the generation that invented Google and Facebook, Second Life, and kept Sanjaya on American Idol all those weeks, we should be able to take care of our own. This is Generation Cancer, and it is our fight. We have the sheer numbers, the voting power, and the influence to change the rules, because remission is not an excuse for a cure, and once again, survivorship is all that matters. On last week's show, Stupid Cancer 101 with artist, singer, songwriter Debbie Hennessy, host of Cancer Corner Radio Bob Grayson, and Sona Mehring, founder and executive director of Caring Bridge, tonight's show, the pre-OMG Summit Buzz Nation with Sage Bolte, oncology counselor, sexpert at the Inova Fairfax Medical Center in Virginia, Meg Harrison and Karen DeMero from the Leukemia and Lymphoma Societies here in New York City, and Marcia Stein, CEO of the Young Survival Coalition. So again, hello, my friends, and welcome to yet another fun-filled and exciting romp through the hay on tonight's Stupid Cancer Show, and a Stupid Cancer welcome to all of our first-time listeners here on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Coming to you live from the Chemo Deck, our fabulous studio in downtown Manhattan, I'm your host, Matthew Zachary, a 13-year pediatric brain cancer survivor. Joining me live in the studio tonight, our chief cancer anarchist, Jack Buffard. Hello, Jack.
Good evening, Matthew. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Jack will be monitoring our live, concurrent interactive chat room. So if you have something to say, while I might ignore you, he won't. But feel free to ignore him, as most people do, especially the ladies.
Like the two sitting on the couch?
Yes. Also joining us live in the studio, our live studio audience, I2Wires from New York City, Jill Zacco and Kate Goldberger.
Hello.
Say hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hello.
That was weak. Okay.
A little excited to be here. Come on, say hi.
Hey, baby, what's up?
Hey, what's up?
All right, there we go. And as always, it is my esteemed pleasure to introduce my official partner in crime here on the Stupid Cancer Show, hailing from the Windy City of Chicago, fellow young adult survivor and author of the acclaimed book, Everything Changes, The Insider's Guide to Cancer in Your 20s and 30s, the lovely, talented, blogtastic, and spectacular Carol Rosenthal.
Hello, Matthew.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm pretty spectacular. How about yourself?
That's a nice status to have, pretty spectacular.
Yeah, not too bad.
You been traveling recently? You just got back from Pittsburgh. Where you been?
Yeah, I had my little Boston, D.C., Pittsburgh whirlwind book tour, everything congressional, memorial servicing, and other young adult cancer fun trip.
That was a lot of adjectives, and I think you were pretty spot on.
Yeah, it was a lot of different things and a lot of fun.
And any takeaways? What have you learned? Any lessons? Don't go here, eat there, whatnot?
Well, I learned that they have really amazing sushi in the Senate building. Did you know that?
Now I do.
This is even more reason to visit your senator, as if sitting down across the table from them and kvetching about cancer and making them change everything that's wrong about them ignoring the young adult cancer population. If that's not enough, then you just hop in the elevator and go down to the basement, and there's some really damn good sushi at the Senate.
You learn something every day.
I know. Who knew?
Very nice. Very nice.
I'll keep that in mind. I'm going to be in D.C. next week, so maybe I can make my way in there.
Nice.
Just take a trip over there. And, you know, if you have someone who's special along with you. I had a special person along with me who had this special little pass. She got me on this train. There's a train that you can take underground that connects the different buildings. It connects the building where all the House of Representatives are, and then Congress, and, you know, the big dome Capitol. And it was very cool. It was kind of like being at Disney World, just a little more political.
I've heard of that train, and usually I'm the special one, and it's not a train. It's usually the short bus that I'm getting on, but I'll do my best.
Well, it was a blast. It was very good.
You know, I wanted to mention this. I read something. I picked up this book yesterday called Microtrends, and it came out a couple of years ago, maybe this year. I don't remember, but I read a quick paragraph in it while I was walking toward the car with it. And did you know this? Just an odd, strange, unrelated fact that, like, in 1900, the percentage of lefties in the United States was zero. And today it's like 23% or something like that.
Fascinating.
I'm a lefty. I was just so taken by that. How is it possible that there were no left-handed people in the United States 100 years ago?
Oh, because they, like, tied our hands behind our back and whipped us with chains and, you know, thick brushes and, you know, said, we're going to beat the devil out of you. It wasn't very popular. I think you could have been nailed to a stake and burnt in Salem or something at the time.
So, because my mother, you can only be a lefty if you're inherited down. It's a dominant gene that comes down through your mother. So my mother's a righty. So the question is, like, is she one of those people that was beaten down, you know, for the sake of all hellbent, you know, anti-religious, you know, damnation for being a lefty, and they just put the pen in her right hand and forced her to do that? And it's just fabulous. I flipped open the book, and lo and behold, it was just a piece about lefties in this country with microtrends. Well, there you go.
My mom's a lefty.
We're all going to hell, apparently.
Yeah. Good thing we're Jewish. We don't believe in hell.
Exactly.
We can write with our left hand and go to... Where do we go? Where do Jews go after they die?
Florida.
We go to Zabar's. Or then Florida.
That sounds really good to me. I do think that we need to have a stupid cancer show, though, about spirituality and afterlife beliefs.
I think that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, I think so, because...
Isn't survivorship the afterlife?
Right, that's true.
Yeah... Unless
just the couch
dead.
Is comfy.
I don't know.
The couch is comfy, right.
The couch is comfy. Yeah, but no, it's something that people ask me about and blog about a lot. And I don't know if any of you are ever on Joe. I'm gonna butcher his last name, so forgive me, Joe, if you're listening. I think it's Joe Schneider. I just know him as Joe. Joe in Chicago, he's a good buddy of
Johnny Emmerman. Yeah, Joe Schneider.
Sure.
Joe Schneider. He had a great post on his blog last week about faith and spirituality and what happens to your faith once you're diagnosed with cancer and how that may or may not change your relationship to God, which is something that I've been very interested in writing about in my book and interviewing people about. And I think it's a great conversation that we should, you know, have. Maybe get some chaplains on air. I'm big into the whole chaplain thing. And, yeah, maybe we can talk about it sometime.
I think that might open up, like, crazy Pandora's box with the atheists and the agnostics and the the crazy Bible-toting people. I take that back. Bible-toting people aren't crazy, but
not all of us.
But the atheists and agnostics are. Hey, you're talking to an atheist Jew here. I'm an atheist, and I love talking about.
No, but see, I'm with Bill Maher on this. I'm not atheist because I don't believe in certainty. You know, atheists are certain there is no God. I'm questioning and I have doubt. You know,
you're
it's one of those things.
You're an
agnostic.
Agnostic,
yeah. So I mean, I'm what do they call it? Jeanine Garofalo had a beautiful term for it. It's like secular humanitarian. I thought that
right.
was very elegantly put. We just lost our entire religious base with this conversation.
I'm surprised because I thought you were God all this time, but I guess I was wrong.
Ah, Jack. You have no idea.
I'll tell you who is God. I think she's a goddess. Is Sage Bolte, who we're going to be talking to in a little while. This woman's amazing. She's
yes,
got
she
the
is.
Answers. She's got the answers. I'm very excited that she's on the show tonight.
Yeah, we were trailing each other at two consecutive conferences, one in Orlando and the other in Dallas. So we got to know each other, and she's on the show tonight because I desperately wanted her to say the word dildo at least 5 times in 5 minutes, and she will do that. But we're actually, I was going to let you know, Carol, we're going to do an entire show on sex, sex, and sex, which I think you've been privy to the emails. And we're going to have Dr. Sue Ann Mark on, who was another one of these sexologists in cancer with Julie Larson. Between the four women and me and Jack, while we're outnumbered, it'll probably be a phenomenal show.
It might be a dildo fest.
I think it's going to be a dildo fest. Well, in any case, speaking of dildo fest, Jack, it's time for you to read the news. So let's
super.
So let's cue the music here.
Hello, I'm Kent Brockman, and this is Eye on Cancer.
Just the facts, ma'am.
All righty, folks. During this part of the Stupid Cancer Show, we announce worthy news stories to our adoring listeners to inform them about the latest and greatest in young adult programs, services, events, projects, and other stuff. If you have an upcoming program, event, or press release that you would like to hear broadcast during this part of the segment of the show, please fax it to us at 646-861-2565, 646-861-2565, or send an email to Jack Buford at jack@i2y.com. That's jack@i2y.com. Take it away, my friend. Here you go.
Thank you, Matthew. First up, the I'm Too Young for This Cancer Foundation and the Leukemia Lymphoma Society are proud to present the 2009 OMG Summit for Young Adults, Monday, May 4th, right here in New York City. The Oh My God Summit provides attendees with valuable resources specific to the needs of young adult patients and survivors. Check out the OMG Summit website at www.omgsummit.org. As a precursor to the May 4th OMG Summit, the I2Y New York City Meetup Group is staging our pre-OMG Happy Hour Wednesday, April 29th at the Mercury Bar, located at 9th Avenue and 46th Street in Midtown Manhattan. Join us as we kick off the OMG 2009 season with a fun night out on the town. Breast Cancer Recovery is proud to present their 2009 Infinite Boundaries Retreat, May 28th through May 31st in Eagle River, Wisconsin. Please refer to bcrecovery.org for more information, or you can reach them at 888-821-1140. Drum Strong 2009 is May 16th and 17th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Drum for Cures produces the annual cancer health resource event, Drum Strong, raising awareness, funds, and cancer education for cancer education and research while supporting survivorship through rhythm. Drum Strong is setting up a Team I2Y, and all funds raised by Team I2Y will benefit I2Y. To register or make a donation, please visit drumstrong.org. Seattle, Washington, are you looking for a support group to partake in? Well, put down your lattes and pay attention because the Leukemia Lymphoma Society is here to help. The Young Adult Support Group will meet on the third Monday of the month for the next 3 months. To register for this free group, log on to www.lls.org/WA or contact Stacy Martin at stacy.martin@lls.org. Camp Make a Dreams Ovarian Cancer Retreat is being held April 30th through May 4th. Make a Dreams Young Adult Survivor Retreat is May 13th through the 18th, and I will be there. Join me as I head out to fabulous Montana for this awesome survivor retreat, and I hope to see you there. For more information about hanging out with me at Camp Make a Dream, refer to www.campdream.org or call Camp Make a Dream at area code 406-549-5987. Head on over to events.i2y.com and you will see all the official I2Y events going on around the country. And they are as follows. I2Y Gainesville chapter presents I2Y Stupid Cancer Ice Cream Social, April 28th from 5 to 9 at Sweet Dreams in Gainesville, Florida. As I mentioned earlier, on Wednesday, April 29th, from 7 to 10 at the Mercury Bar in New York City, we have our pre-OMG Stupid Cancer Happy Hour. April 30th, from 7 to 11 p.m. at the Valley Tavern in San Francisco, California, we have an official Stupid Cancer Happy Hour. Valley Tavern, 4054 24th Street in San Francisco, California. All of these events are free of charge. You can bring your friends, bring your spouses, and bring your fun, good times. Hey, all you survivors in Ohio, Saturday, May 9th, Matthew Zachary will be the keynote speaker at the second annual Brain Tumor Awareness and Survivor event in Columbus. This event is presented by The Ohio State University, Comprehensive Cancer Center, James Care Hospital, and SoLove Research Institute, and is being held at the Fawcett Center on the campus of The Ohio State University. There is no cost to attend. However, registration is required. To register for this survivor event, please call Deanna Valentine at 614-293-4448. Attention, New York City. Thursday, June 4th, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center is presenting their Young Adults, New Challenges, New Beginnings, Life After Cancer Workshop. This workshop is focused on living beyond cancer, and for more information and to register, please call 212-717-3527. Appearing in Washington, D.C. for one night only, Jana's Body.
Jana's Body, please hold a cancerous...
Oh, that's right. Yes. I'm sorry, I can't read my own typing. Appearing in Washington, D.C. for one night only, Jana's Body, please hold a cancerous dark comedy starring the amazing Jana Thomasis. Did I say that correctly, Matt?
Jana Thomasis.
Thomasis. Jana, I'm so fired. Jana is a three-time cancer survivor who turned her experience into a funny, uplifting performance you must see. This event is free to all young adult cancer survivors, and to RSVP for Jana's Body, please hold. Please contact Kelly Alfaro at kelly.alfaro@lls.org or call Kelly at 703-399-2936. Everything Changes, The Insider's Guide to Cancer in Your 20s and 30s is the newly released book written by our very own Stupid Cancer co-host, Carol Rosenthal.
Woohoo!
I like her. Everything Changes dusts the sugarcoating off the young adult cancer experience. It is packed with gripping stories and an unprecedented collection of young adult cancer resources. Everything Changes is available wherever books are sold, and you can visit the book's website at everythingchangesbook.com. Next up, we have 70k.org. That's the word 70, the letter K.org. There are approximately 70,000 people aged 15 to 39 diagnosed with cancer every year. For over two decades, there has been little or no improvement in survival for this age group. By signing this bill, you are supporting the Adolescent and Young Adult Cancer Bill of Rights to be established as a standard for care to meet the needs of this underserved population. Moving on to cancer care programs, the young adult groups that are active and running at Cancer Care are as follows. Living with Cancer, Inactive Treatment, Life After Cancer, Post-Treatment, Young Adults Loss of a Parent, Young Women with Breast Cancer, Young Adult Individual Grief Counseling, and Young Adult Caregiver, all diagnoses and relationships. Contact our friend Julie Larson at jlarson@cancercare.org. That's jlarson@cancercare.org. Or you can reach Julie by phone at area code 212-712-6173. And finally, we have Live On, Sperm Banking by Mail for Cancer Patients. Don't do what I did, guys. Trust me, mailing sperm without a live-on kit is frowned on by our federal government. For more information on sperm banking by mail, please go to www.liveonkit.com. Live sperm banking by mail is made possible by our good friends at Fertile Hope, and I would like to send a big thank you to the law firm of Dewey, Scroom & Howe for clearing up my embarrassing situation with the United States Postal Service. And that, my friends, is the Stupid Cancer News.
Oh, God. All right. We kind of keep Jack here as a pet, ladies and gentlemen. All right, moving on.
What time is it?
My first guest here tonight is here to talk about nothing but sex. Sage Bolte is an oncology counselor for Life with Cancer, a nonprofit program in Northern Virginia. She provides individual and family counseling and facilitates cancer support groups. She presents at local, regional, and national conferences to survivors and healthcare professionals on the impact of cancer on the sexual self. She's finishing up her PhD, where her research will explore the impact of cancer and its treatments on the young adult's sexual self as compared to their healthy peers. Please welcome to the show, Dildo, excuse me, Sage Bolte.
Hey, what an introduction that is.
You wrote it, so there you go. Welcome to the show.
I'm saying my dildo, dildo, diddle, dildo, dildo. Try saying that 100 times. I'm saying that for you now, Matthew.
Okay. Get it all out of the way. Get it all out of the way right now.
Get it all out of the way.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're stoked to have you here because, I mean, I wanted you here to wet the whistle because we're going to do a crazy, sexy show on nothing but sex and young adults on, I think we agreed, June 9th. Was that the day we picked?
I think that's about the date, yeah, and I'm super stoked that we're going to be doing that. It's going to be
awesome.
Monday,
June 9th, the crazy, sexy, no, we can't use that because Chris Carl get pissed at us.
Right.
We'll just do the sextastic sexgasm.
Right.
Onco sexgasm. We'll make something up.
I need a paper bag to breathe into.
We're getting Jack too excited.
I'm going to take off my shirt. I'm so hot.
Okay. So anyway, I mean, Carol and I were just thrilled to have you on. We're both huge fans. I love the fact that we sort of, you know, like stalked each other without realizing it at two conferences in a row this spring.
And I know, it's so good.
It was really great, and we're it's just really cool. So, talk about sex, Carol.
Let's talk about sex.
I should cue up the TL with the salt and pepper song.
I know, Carol. How are you, girl?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Good. It's so good to hear you.
Well, you know, you and I had an amazing conversation when I was doing some research for my book, and I would love to resurrect that line of thinking that we had and just ask you a bunch of questions because this is something that people never talk about and everyone wants to hear about. And so can we just launch in? Can I grill you?
Absolutely. Let's go.
Okay. All right. So when you are counseling young adults about sexual issues, first of all, I mean, how does it work? People are embarrassed to talk about this stuff. Do they make an appointment? Do they come in and talk to you to pry this information out of them? Or are people like, I really want to talk about sex? I mean, what do you think? Are we, like, up for this conversation, embarrassed about it?
You know, I think still, unfortunately, we still can be a little timid about it. And so I think our role, my role, and other people in my profession's role is really to normalize it, because the fact of the matter is people are having sex. And not only are they having sex, but we are all sexual beings, whether that is sex with ourselves or sex with someone else. And cancer doesn't change that. So I think introducing the topic in, like, our young adult group, that has helped normalize it a little bit. People know that I'm going to bring it up. So anyone that at least interacts with me knows it's going to come up in conversation. As far as when people are seeking to talk about it, usually it really does, unfortunately, lay on the shoulders of the survivor to kind of reach out to someone who can talk to them about sex and intimacy after cancer. And some of those professionals are going to be either sex therapists or some of the social workers there locally within your cancer institution.
Now, speak about the word sex therapist. I guess that's two words, sex therapist. Two words. What does that mean? You know, I've had very varying false images of what a sex therapist is.
We don't sit on a couch and guide you through the process.
Yeah.
That's not what we do. We don't bring out mirrors and guide you through what is what.
It's not steel magnolias.
No, it's not. It's not a how-to or a show and tell. No. Unfortunately, gentlemen, you really just go and have to use your words and talk about things. Now, a sex therapist, I'm using that term somewhat loosely tonight. There are certified sex therapists, and if you're having sexual dysfunction, like erectile function or vaginal atrophy that isn't resolving with some of the gynecological recommendations that your gynecologist might make. A sex therapist would be found on the ASECT website, which is AASECT.org, and you can find a certified sex therapist on there that are fantastic and have you know, a list and wonderful training and great information available. The downside is, I think, what we're finding is even people in this field, there's only a handful of us that really know cancer well. And I started out in cancer and then kind of rolled into the sex therapy piece. And so it is few and far between to find some of us who specialize in understanding chronic illness, especially cancer and survivorship, and how it impacts the sexual self. But there are a handful of us out there.
Well, since we've got you on the horn, and since the information is, you know, few and far between, let's dive into some questions here.
Let's do it.
What are some of the physical consequences of treatment that impact people's sexuality?
You know, I think there's a lot, so we're just going to kind of talk a little bit about a few of them just because we'll do more later in June, I think. But the biggest ones I just want to touch on that people, I think, dismiss are some of the basic side effects of treatment, like fatigue. And if we think about fatigue, you know, some people just poo-poo it as fatigue, but if you're tired, you're really not spending any time in your intimate and or sexual relationships, again, whether that's with yourself or with a partner. And I want to say, Carol, when I'm talking about kind of sexuality, I'm really using a broad, how I describe sexuality is really how a person talks about their sexual self, how their cultural influences that, how their religious beliefs influence that, how they define themselves as a man or a woman, who they're attracted to, who they have sex with, if they're comfortable with masturbation, if they're comfortable with using toys and sex play, if they're comfortable with the lights on, with the lights off, et cetera. All of those things go into their sexual function, their sexuality, and how they express themselves sexually. So getting back to the physical consequences, there's a lot of them that treatment impacts, and some of them are short-term impacts and some of them are long-term. And the short-term ones, like fatigue, can really be a downer on your sex life and also on your sex life with yourself, but also, again, your intimate relationships with people. Some of the other things, like a delayed menses or rather a lack of a period, and then the possible infertility, can definitely play a role in how you feel about yourself as a man or a woman. And I don't think, again, we give enough weight to how that makes somebody feel about themselves sexually. The other big ones, if I can just focus in on women for a minute first.
Bring it on.
All right. So I was watching some of the blog talk that we were doing here, and we were talking about chemo can cause vaginal atrophy. There were a couple of people that mentioned that. And yes, chemo can cause vaginal atrophy, and vaginal atrophy is the weakening of the vaginal muscles. And we joke, there's been a couple people in our young adult group who have been told they have the vaginas of 80-year-olds. That's not a compliment, ladies. So vaginal atrophy is not a good thing. It may mean that, you know, someone said on there, it may mean that you're tight. Well, not tight in a good way. The muscles are weak. They are thin. They can tear. It can be painful. And that's not a fun experience. So we don't want that consequence, because you don't want to be 25 or 35 and have an 80-year-old vagina. Not a fun thing to think about. So I can talk about in a minute what we can do about that, but I just want to mention that that's really normal. So the problem, I think, with the young adult population is some people weren't sexually active prior to cancer, and so they may not know that is not normal, and it's not normal, ladies. So if you're experiencing pain with sex on a consistent basis, that's not a normal response, and that should be examined. Some of the other things that happen with treatment itself with men is that it actually can, both chemotherapy and radiation, because of the fatigue, but also the side effect of chemotherapy, can decrease the firmness of an erection, so you may get a weaker erection. You may have less, some of the guys I work with say they're not able to keep it up as long, or they may come quickly, and that can be a side effect of both treatment, but also just, again, the body recovering and recuperating from an assault on it, and it doesn't bounce back as we might hoped it would. Other questions, Carol? You want me to comment on more physical side effects?
I have a question, if I could jump in real quick.
Yeah.
Has there, and I'm just totally making this up, but has there ever been a case where chemotherapy and cancer treatment has actually increased libido and gotten people who are normally, like, kind of quiet and subdued, you know, into, like, raging maniacs?
Raging.
Yes, I'm here to say that that has happened to me.
Right. So,
sorry, don't mean to answer for you,
Carol,
Faith.
Carol is one of the few that has happened to. Now, I can say I don't think it would be chemo that induced that. I honestly think there are some people that do have an increased libido at the beginning of diagnosis and during treatment, almost as a psychological reaction, because it's something they've got to feel good about something. And sex, whether it's with yourself or someone else, helps you feel alive. Having an orgasm feels really good. So some people may notice that they have an increase in that reaction or response, and it could be because of chemo. My guess is it's more related to the emotional need of just needing to feel something other than that.
And for me, I was I haven't had chemo, but it was hormone therapies. And so can you talk a little bit about the whole hormonal shift that goes on when you're taking different hormones and hormones and
general? Hormones really whack with us, which is part of the reason that chemo really affects our bodies is it changes the hormone balance, especially for younger women. And it can put you into an early menopause, which is what causes the vaginal atrophy. But also, if you're taking any kind of hormone or anti-hormones, that also can impact it. So if you're a breast cancer survivor and you're estrogen receptive positive and you're taking tamoxifen, most likely that's going to lower your libidic response. Some women who have taken tamoxifen and have had an increase in libidic response, but that's a very, very, very few numbers. And then anyone who's taking hormone replacement to help from preventing menopause, whether it's estrogen, progesterone, or testosterone, that can help increase libidic response or your libido and your desire as well as your sexual performance.
Well, you know, Sage, we only have a couple minutes before we wrap up this conversation. I want to come back to a phrase that you used, which was sex life with yourself, because I know dating and being single with cancer is so hard. And I think often we just think about, I have to have a partner in order to have a sexual life. Well, even when you do have a partner, you can have a sexual life with yourself. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit more about that sex life with yourself component.
Absolutely. This is where the dildos come in, Matthew.
Very nice.
So everybody knows the difference between a dildo and a vibrator. Dildos don't move. Vibrators do. Okay.
Duly noted.
There you go. So when we're talking about a sex life with ourselves, everyone has a sex life with themselves, even if you're not comfortable with the idea of sex with yourself, like what I would define as masturbation or using fantasy or other things to help yourself feel good sexually and maybe reach orgasm.
Holy crap.
I know. Can you believe it? The thing I think that's important, Carol, about identifying yourself as a sexual being is acknowledging and allowing yourself to be a sexual being, and that with or without cancer, you can have a sex life and a sex life with yourself. So the most important thing about being a survivor and you're thinking about dating and you're single and you're wondering, how do I disclose that I'm a survivor? You better be really darn comfortable with your body and some of what we call in the oncology world, quote unquote, the new normal, what your new normal is. And that may change a lot, but you've got to be comfortable in your own skin and be comfortable with some of the changes that have happened, whether it's because of chemotherapy or radiation or surgery. You need to be comfortable with that. And the only way to be comfortable with that is really to get to know your body, and getting to know your body through touching it. Again, whether that's sexual touch or not, you need to be comfortable with that so that you can guide someone else to touching you. So again, the part of being a sexual being on your own is really being comfortable exploring what feels good and what doesn't. And for guys, that can be an array of things, probably wouldn't involve vibrators or dildos, but some people like that. And there are, you know, exploring whether it's with yourself masturbating with pornography or fantasizing or using magazines or whatever floats your boat. It's really important to get comfortable in your own skin and feel comfortable with yourself being a sexual being.
Well, Sage, this is just the beginning of the longer conversation that we're going
Carol,
to
it's
be
just
having.
Too short. Just
it's
too short.
Short.
We
it's
have June short. 9th all the whole hour.
We're just tempting them with a few words here.
Yeah, yeah. This is just a teaser.
That's right.
So it was great to chat with you again. There's also a lot of sage wisdom in my book if you want to check that out. I am doing a lot of blogging about sex these days. Where else can people find you, Sage, or things that you've been talking about? Any good places to
there? Yeah, there is. I'm getting a website up and ready. Hopefully it will be out in the next couple weeks. I think Planet Cancer and a couple other organizations are going to put out my research. My dissertation is going to be looking at the sexual self of young adult cancer survivors. So all of you listening would love it if you participate. I will have a link up, and that'll lead to my website, and hopefully we can keep dialoguing about this in the future. It's not there yet, but it's on its way.
Thank you so much, Sage.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys, for having me. So good to talk to you.
Okay.
All right.
I'm gonna Sage, Bolte, everybody.
That was good. I'm going to go say hi to the ladies on the couch.
No.
Okay, all right. Relax. All righty. Let's see where we are here. Let me wrap this up here and get this thing working here. Okay, time to enter our next two guests. Where are we here? Let's pause this and bring in our, this one. Okay, my next two guests come in pairs. Meg Harrison is the Patient Services Manager for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society New York City Chapter with a Master's in Counseling Psychology from the University of Colorado. Has been working with various patient populations for the last 10 years and spent the last 3 years at Leukemia and Lymphoma Society and is passionate about the development of innovative programs to meet the needs of patients and their families. And Karen DeMero is the Senior Patient Services Manager for the Long Island Chapter New York Metro Division of LLS with a Master's degree in Health Services Administration and a Bachelor's degree in Biology and Human Services. As a Senior Patient Services Manager, she is responsible for the administration of all patient and community programs provided by the Long Island Chapter of the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, as well as coordinating patient service activities for the New York City Metro Division. Karen and Meg are the critical integral cogs in the formation of the OMG Cancer Conference Series, and I couldn't be happier to have them on the show. Please welcome Karen, DeMero, and Meg Harrison.
Hi.
Hey, Matthew.
Welcome, welcome.
How's it going?
Sorry, we're running late because we were talking about dildos. I'm sure you were fascinated by the conversation.
Well, you know, I'm kind of a little upset. I mean, we had to follow Sage and Seth. Come on.
I guess Sage should always be the closing act, I guess, right? I'm still sweating.
So.
Jack's like sitting here without his shirt. It's just something's wrong here.
I'm so sweating from that last segment.
But I'm really thrilled to have you guys on the show, not only to promote the OMG conference in 2 weeks, but just to talk about what a remarkable relationship that we have started with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society here in New York with your two chapters, and which is spreading like wildfire all around the country. We were speaking with the folks in Chicago. We were speaking with the folks in Los Angeles and San Francisco and up in Boston and D.C. It's really quite amazing. So, the listeners, most of them probably already know about the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, but how about just a quick history?
In terms of OMG, you want quick
Well,
history?
In terms of like how LLS came to recognize the need for young adults.
Well, at least from our end here in the New York area, and you know, Meg can chime in at any time. About 2 years ago, we decided that we really needed to start doing some programs for young adults. I mean, you know, we do programs all the time on various different topics, but the young adult population was one that we felt was not getting its attention, and we needed to do something. So Meg and I actually attended a program with the Children's Cancer Cause, the Rise to Action. We knew you were going to be there. In fact, we were told to look for you, which we did. Met up with you, told you about what we wanted to do, and got started last year with our first program and knew that it was something that had to go on for a couple of years, and if not, forever.
And it seemed to work really well. I mean, we're on our second annual already here, and I think 2010 is going to have a lot of new surprises for people. But
I think also that it's gone beyond the OMG conference, which I personally am very excited about, because working with a lot of young adults, especially in the New York City area, who were just looking for a place to go. And now I don't have to look
any further than saying, go to the I'm Too Young for This website. And it's been a great resource for me, and certainly the relationship between all of our organizations, which is now growing to include other young adult organizations, just has that whole feeling of camaraderie and that they're not alone and there's places specially for them.
Well, I'm wondering if you guys can talk a little bit about within the world of leukemia and lymphoma, do you see a lot of patients that are in this young adult's age group? You know, what percentage of us comprises sort of the overall group of patients who you see and deal with through your work?
Well, I think particularly for Hodgkin's lymphoma, which unfortunately strikes young adults more than any other age group. And so we see a lot of people from their late teens to, I don't know, late 20s, early 30s that are Hodgkin's lymphoma survivors in particular.
And what about on your website? I know when I was doing a lot of research for my book, I kept coming back and back and back to the LLS website because you had so many fantastic resources. As a matter of fact, I think you guys have a conversation with Sage on there. Folks should go to your website and look up Sage because I believe that there's a little video of Sage talking about sex on there.
Ooh,
yeah.
It's chock full of stuff. I think, you know, sometimes it can be a tad difficult to navigate, but the search engine works great. So you can type in whatever you're looking for and it will pull up all the stuff so you don't have to search manually for it.
And do you have any resources that are young adult specific per se, or do you just have a lot of different resources that are for the general population that young adults can also take advantage of?
Well, Karen, you can talk more about this too for Long Island. Each chapter is unique in what they're able to offer. As I mentioned, I kind of send all of my young adults to your website and also to Julie Larson over at Cancer Care because she has some really great support groups targeting both young adults in treatment and then another one for young adults outside of treatment. All of our support groups in the New York City area are open to patients and their families of all ages. So although we've been trying to start a support group specifically for young adults, they're busy, and so we've had some trouble doing that. But we do have a program called First Connection, which allows us to match up people according to their diagnosis, their age, and their specific concerns with volunteers who have already walked that road and have had some training from us to kind of reach out to the newbies and lead them down the path. And I think that's been an incredible resource for our young adults.
That's
right.
Fantastic, yeah.
We also have we have a support group out on the island, and actually because of the population not being overly big, it's for patients with any diagnosis as long as they're in that age group between 18 and 40. Mm-hmm. You know, and also I think a lot through Matt's efforts and a lot of his constituents, they've managed to now start an I2Y chapter out on Long Island, which a lot of our volunteers are intimately involved in. We're also doing a pilot program right now on patient navigation, and we're specifically working with young adults because we have a lot of young adult survivors who have wanted to help, and they're helping navigate some other young adults through the process, and many of them came to us initially through what Meg referred to as our First Connection program, which is peer support. So, you know, we're trying to get more and more out there for the young adult population, you know, and as new things come up, we try to address those different needs.
I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit more about the word patient navigation. You know, it is a term that is coming up more and more, and you start to see that there's new funding, new grants for patient navigators, that there are a lot of pilot programs for patient navigators. And I think that it can be really confusing. What does that term mean? Sometimes it sounds like a catchphrase. What does that actually mean when you talk about a patient navigator?
Well, you know, the definition is someone who helps a patient work through the barriers to their health care. And what we're doing at the Society is working with some of the chapters to pilot it with certain populations. And like I said, ours is young adults. So what we've done is train a group of volunteers who will work with young adults. And when they've been identified by either a social worker or a doctor or a nurse, that maybe there are some issues that they may need help in getting resolved so that they can get the care they need, they'll refer them to us and we'll try and work with them. Sometimes it's, you know, financial issues. They need help getting on their feet or finding resources. Sometimes it might be just looking for support from other young adult groups because they don't know where to go for it. But ours are basically just trying to help guide them through the system.
Great. That's really fantastic that you have volunteers helping in that capacity too, because I know that so often as young adults we want to give back and we want to do something to help, and that just sounds like a really constructive, good way to do it.
And that's exactly where we got them.
There's so much information out there, some of it fantastic and some of it not so hot. And so I think helping to narrow that giant field down to just what the great stuff is
mm-hmm.
can really take a load off the person who's kind of dealing with all the other things of managing their cancer at the moment.
Absolutely. It's a jungle out there, diving through the information and finding what's, you know, what's necessary and what isn't, kind of weeding through that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, the part that I find most compelling about all of this is that there is a young adult movement that is continually growing exponentially every day. And with the outcrop of opportunities like partnerships with LLS nationwide, it's kind of like, you know, they have the infrastructure. They have chapters, they have volunteers, they have membership, they have constituency and sort of a community infrastructure that's already in place. And it's like the perfect mesh with the young adult movement, where we don't necessarily need to recreate the wheel, and building all these chapters and leveraging the infrastructure that LLS has, along with other organizations that have similar platforms like Gildo's Club and the Wellness Community. It just seems to be a really phenomenal, almost an anthropological success story in how the two age groups and the two infrastructures are meshing together to just completely continue to germinate the movement. And I was so humbled when you guys first came to me and said, we want to do something for young adults. And I was like, oh, my God, Matt gets to be a kid in a candy store and invent a conference that doesn't exist. And here we are today where it's become like this sort of this franchisable thing, which are really looking to export to other different regions of the country. I couldn't be more happy that this is the direction that the relationship took. And again, it's sort of emblematic of the needs that are out there and this wildfire rise of interest in this patient population.
Well, and I think it was great for us because we knew that there was something we wanted to do and we needed to partner with the experts in the young adult field. And I think, you know, to Matthew's credit and the I2I Foundation, it's just that now on a regular basis, Meg and I get emails from our counterparts in other chapters across the country saying that they want to do a young adult program, and they understand that we have a great relationship with I2I, and how can they get connected as well?
Well, there you go, folks. The OMG Cancer Summit, we're having two this spring. The first one is on Monday, May 4th in New York City. The website is omgsummit.org. The second one is on June 6th, Saturday, up in Syracuse with the Upstate New York Regional Chapter of Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. And that website is syracuse.omgsummit.org. Meg and Karen, it's a real privilege and an honor to be working with you all these years, and I look forward to nothing but continued success.
Right back
Thank
at you.
Right back at you. It was right.
Thanks a lot. All right. Thanks
much
for being on the show. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay,
bye.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
All righty. Meg Harrison, Karen DeMiro from Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. And now, okay, my final guest tonight was diagnosed with breast cancer at 34 years old and is now a 12-year survivor. Where is my mouse? There it is. Okay. She believes that healthcare is a right and not a privilege, and has spent her career focused on healthcare for the uninsured and underinsured. As a young adult breast cancer survivor, she was on the board of the Young Survival Coalition for 8 years before becoming its chief executive officer. My pleasure to welcome to the show one of my favorite people, Marcia Stein. Hello, Marcia.
Hey, Matthew.
Thanks
Hi,
for being
Marcia.
On the show.
Nice to be here.
We are so excited to have you on the show, specifically, obviously, because of our wonderful partnership with the OMG Conference, which is, I'm sure, the first of many partnerships in the young adult universe here. But I really wanted to dig down a little bit into this amazing controversy going on right now that we've been blogging about. It's been getting so many feedback comments and tags in the social media universe. If you could talk a little bit, just to get the conversation started, about what this Florida bill was about and the opposition through the National Breast Cancer Coalition Foundation, and how this is emblematic of social change, but still behind every door is 10 more.
Well, let's see. Okay, so at the end of March, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, she's a congresswoman from Miami, Florida, introduced a bill into Congress called the Early Act. And I think it's I can't remember what the acronym is. I should know anyway. But the whole point of the act is that Debbie Wasserman Schultz had breast cancer. She was diagnosed about a year ago, and she found the lump herself. And when she had found the lump, she went for some testing, and she discovered that she was BRCA2, which is the genetic disposition to breast cancer, which, you know, people hear about sometimes as like the Ashkenazi Jewish gene. You know, so a very small percentage of women have a genetic mutation that leaves them pretty prone to breast cancer. And really, when she went through the experience, she did it quietly. I mean, she campaigned for Clinton, she campaigned for Obama. Nobody knew that all this was going on while she was doing all this campaigning. She had 7 surgeries just without missing literally a day of work. And when she was done with her treatment, she was really trying to look at the breast cancer landscape in order to try to figure out where the gaps were. And I think she identified, rightly, is that there's a very big gap around breast cancer in young women, where people just don't really perceive it as an issue, but it really is, because roughly 12,000 women every year are diagnosed with young women are diagnosed with breast cancer, and there's about 250,000 young adults living with breast cancer in the U.S. So it's actually a fairly significant public health issue, and on top of that, there's no diagnostic test for young with breast cancer. So to give back, what she looked at doing was putting together a public health campaign to really teach women young, so I would say in the high school and college level, to know the warning signs of breast cancer, to know whether or not, to be able to identify if they have risk factors, so if, for example, they have family history of breast cancer, and also how to do breast self-awareness so that they can examine their own breasts, you know, either informally or through a technique called breast self-exam to see whether or not they have lumps. And she introduced that legislation, and the YSC met with her, and as well as many other of the breast cancer groups. So Common was there, YME was there, Force was there, Sharsheret. So I'm reeling off all the names of the big breast cancer groups. And, you know, I have to say it was a really wonderful experience working with her office. They're very responsive to our issues and to our concerns about different pieces of legislation. And there's 3 parts to the legislation. One is a public awareness campaign for young women. Another is a public awareness campaign for providers so that they know that breast cancer can and does happen in young women. And I see that every day on our bulletin boards where women go to the doctors and the doctor says you're too young to have breast cancer, and they come back 2 years later and they're finally diagnosed, at which point it's a major problem. And then the third piece is really a survivorship piece for grants for organizations to handle women who have been diagnosed with breast cancer and their long-term survivorship issues. Introduce the legislation, and then about 3 weeks later, MBCC said that they completely disagreed with it and did not believe that the legislation should go forth.
Can you say a little bit about what NBCC is, what they stand for, if people aren't familiar with that acronym?
So MBCC is the National Breast Cancer Coalition, and it's an organization that basically represents a lot of breast cancer organizations and lobbies for different pieces of legislation.
What was their opposition primarily based on?
Well, their opposition is basically that because you shouldn't have any piece of legislation that targets any special groups. So that, you know, for example, they wouldn't have legislation for young women and they wouldn't have legislation for African Americans. Anything that targets a specific type of breast cancer segment is bad from their perspective.
Because?
Because they tend to believe that legislation should be for all breast cancer survivors, which works in some cases. So, for example, they help put together the Department of Defense Breast Cancer Research Program, which does a lot of really good innovative research.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, there are definitely segments of the breast cancer population that could use a very good public health campaign, such as young women with breast cancer, because it's definitely an overlooked population. So it works sometimes, doesn't work other times.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. I was just in Washington meeting with a lot of legislators talking about young adult cancer issues, and, you know, they do often say, well, you know, we don't think it's a good idea to make legislation specific diseases even or for specific cancer types. So it's, you know, a flip side of the coin for this organization who is advocating for funding for breast cancer in general. There would be some legislators who say, you know, we just need to give money to cancer in general, and you guys can fight over where it goes to. So, yeah,
you know,
there are all different levels of that going on.
You know, I think that would be okay, and I'll kind of do a little bit of call to arms, except for the fact that there has hardly ever been any sort of research into breast cancer in young women. There's been a minute amount of money put into that. And so to have a public health campaign to really talk about the issues is really important. And I think it's kind of the same thing with all young adult cancers, where it's really just kind of a very silent segment of all cancers.
So, you know, this issue of there being no research, which is so common to all different kinds of young adult cancers, with very little research being done on young adult women and breast cancer, what was the decision to go ahead with advocacy and education campaigns rather than ask for funding for research?
Well, I think the opportunity was around the advocacy, and I think that that actually is an enormous need also, because we see so many young women who are misdiagnosed because their doctors go, you're really too young to have breast cancer, and this is all over the country, from major teaching centers like in Chicago to places where you might suspect there might not be good health care. I think that one of the approaches of this bill that's very important is that it does the patients, it does the general public, and it also does the providers.
So talk a little bit about this fear factor that people have been responding to with this mention of this bill.
Well, there's some misinformation out there or misunderstanding. One of the big parts of the bill is that there's a council put together to develop the public health awareness campaign so that the council can be sensitive to the different populations that it's talking to. So if it's talking to teenage girls in high school, it's going to talk differently than it's going to talk to women in college. Although I'd argue that if I'm a teenager in high school and I'm learning about HIV and sex and being pregnant and contraception, that learning a little bit about good, proper breast health is not a bad thing. At the same time. I mean, they're the big, 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 you know, heavy things to be talking about, things like HIV and AIDS. You know, I think to tell women that they should be, know their bodies and that they shouldn't be afraid to advocate for themselves is not a bad thing for a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And so people are afraid. And I think that one of the things is out there, you know, that we're going to be teaching 8-year-olds that they should be afraid that they're going to get breast cancer. And there is absolutely nothing in the bill to do anything like that. It's to teach women in a culturally sensitive manner, you know, to know their bodies and to advocate for themselves.
If I could hop in here, it almost sounds like the same, like, crazy fear-mongering around the Gardasil issue, which is that it just made no sense that people would be afraid that by supporting Gardasil or being an advocate for it would somehow encourage sort of licentious behavior on the part of people to engage in sex, and it would be used as birth control, or like it just didn't make any sense whatsoever, any argument that came out of that. Is this on some sort of strange parallel with that? They're just making things up because they don't want that money going to it. They'd rather have that money going to themselves.
Yes.
Okay. That was about as straight shot as you get.
You know, I mean, I think any sort of thought that a young woman doesn't know her own mind is, you know, you remember what you were like in high school. You want to know this stuff.
I'm afraid of what I was like in high school.
Yeah,
you had
I
a
know,
big afro.
I did have
yeah,
a big
I
afro.
I know, but didn't you want to know what was going on with your body? I mean, couldn't you have used, you know, didn't the skills that you learned to, like, speak up for yourself, aren't you using them now, Matthew?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
I had the Marlboro Man visit my health education class in high school.
Oh, wow.
Sweet.
Did he talk like this?
Didn't he get esophageal cancer or something like throat cancer?
Yeah.
Probably.
He was talking about AIDS prevention because I believe that's what he died of.
Yeah,
or maybe I wasn't paying attention. They were really talking about lung cancer, and all I was thinking about was sex and STDs. But
you're listening to your journey cassette in the back of the class.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I want to talk a little bit too about this idea of false positives with breast biopsies, and you know, other people have raised that as an issue of concern. Of you know, if you feel a lump and you go out there and you get a biopsy, it might be a false positive. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about false positives, and also about some of the potential ramifications of having biopsies and some of the complications that can come up with that.
Well, I think the fear is that by teaching young women that if they have a lump, it may be breast cancer, that every time a young woman has a lump, she's going to go running to the doctor and say, you must biopsy this, you must give me a mammogram, you know, you must give me an ultrasound. And that's clearly potentially an issue. I mean, I'm sure there are some women who may react to a level of education by being quite worried about their body.
Is that the goal of the education, though? If you
do
feel something, then you should bring it to the attention of your doctor? That's not...
The goal of the legislation is that you should know your body, and if you feel something strange, you should feel comfortable talking about it with your provider,
mm-hmm.
and that you should go for... And it's certainly doing that. Some providers may be more conservative than others, and some of them may send you for a mammogram, and some of them may feel like and some percentage may feel that that mammogram is suspicious and may say we need to biopsy it. But I would say that, in general, an ounce of prevention is worth it, in the sense that if you're going to the provider and that they're at least feeling the lump, they can track it long-term and then decide mm-hmm. whether or not there's a need for further tests, either a mammogram and or an ultrasound and biopsy or an MRI, depending upon the circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
But that's only one piece of the act. The major part of the act is teaching, is also trying to get women to recognize whether or not they have any risk factors for having breast cancer early, such as having a family history of it. So what you really...
Sorry, I was just commenting to Carol prior to this. Like, it's funny that all of a sudden fear mongering is something that we have to be aware of and cautious of in terms of policy. Like, it's all we do in this country is scare the crap out of people and hope that they actually care about it or take action, or living on Xanax and Prozac to, you know, in this dysturbia that is manifested by public health issues. Why now all of a sudden it's like, oh, we can't instill fear into these people?
Well, I think there's kind of an underlying tone to this whole campaign that's a little disturbing, and it's basically that young women are too immature to be able to figure out what's going on with their body and to be able to advocate for themselves. And I think I think there's this underpinning to a lot of what people are suggesting that I think is really a little dangerous. I mean, I think what we're trying to do, and I'm a parent, is I'm trying to train my child to be the best advocate that they can be for themselves.
That must be why abstinence only works so well.
Right. If it only worked that well, there would be no children, no teenage pregnancies.
So this is a House bill, is that correct?
It's in the House right now. It has 260 sponsors, which is more than they need in order for passage, and it's about to be introduced in the Senate.
Okay, so what is the path ahead? Does it look like? I mean, I know that there's a lot of kvetching about the bill and all kinds of inflammatory responses and back and forthing on the Huffington Post, and but what's the likelihood of this bill passing or not passing in the House and in the Senate? What are we looking at here?
Well, I don't know that I have a great sense of that. I mean, the YSC is supporting the bill. There are certainly some areas of the bill that we think that there are needs for improvement. And we've been working actively with the Congresswoman's staff to have the bill modified, and that's been ongoing actually for several months now. I think the bill is going to be introduced in the Senate in the next few weeks. And then at that point, it goes through whatever the sausage-making legislative process is, which seems to always be a bit arcane. They kind of go into a back room and they wave their hands, and then the bill becomes law. So I think it's about to go into that process, where it's going to go into committee, and then hopefully will be passed in the fall, like late summer, early fall.
Do you foresee a cage match, or is like the might of Komen and all these other groups enough to overthrow the influence of the National Breast Cancer Coalition Foundation?
Well, you know, YRC is actually pretty active in NBCC, and NBCC, you know, is certainly pretty important because it really it does advocate for the needs of all women. So I want to say the good thing about that. I don't know if it's going to be a cage match, but I think that certainly young women all over the United States are looking at this bill. And particularly because it really is the first piece of legislation to address the needs. And so I think that there's going to be a lot of push to have this bill passed from multiple organizations.
Well, we have about a minute left or so, but I think that this the outcome of this will be emblematic of the future of young adult advocacy in terms of how we can manifest the collective community. For me, this isn't just about breast cancer. This is about young adult advocacy and the cause itself of risk reduction and early detection or whatever you want to call it in our little population, because it's just a big mess right now. But I would fully support this if it was any cancer, because, again, I don't see this as an AIDS disease-specific issue. This is an AIDS-specific issue. And if there's a petition that goes up or anything that happens as far as collective faith group, we had spoken about, you know, working as a collective on some campaign if it's necessary. I'm all for that. I think this is something that the entire young adult community must get behind, because, again, I don't just see it as just breast cancer.
And I agree with you 100%. I think this is a young adult, that it's really the first major piece of legislation talking about cancer in young adults.
But don't they lump us all into one category of rare disease, all of our cancer?
Right, we're all just extremely rare.
Well, there
I know
you
I am.
There you are. It's like all us extremely rare people.
The rarest of the rare. Well, Marcia,
right.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. As this issue continues to unfold, we'd love to have you back to keep talking about it. Clearly not something that's going to go away right away.
No. And hopefully in a few months we'll have some good news.
All right. Well, I guess we'll see you soon, and I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Marcia
Hi,
Stein,
thanks
the
for
young
coming on, Marcia.
Survival Coalition,
okay.
Everybody.
Bye-bye.
CEO, long-term young adult breast cancer survivor. Man, a lot of this show took an interesting arc in terms of content tonight.
Arc?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think we've wetted the whistle of, oh, God, nothing I say is going to happen. Nothing I say is going to be not perceived as a double entendre at this
What's
point.
Up, Matt?
But I think we've wetted the whistle of our listenership that there's going to be an amazing show on sex on June 9th. We encourage full listenership, standing upright at attention, and no giggity for that one? Okay. That was a plant.
I was marking my calendar with a big gold star.
Ah, fabulous. But,
sexy.
Yeah. So, Carol, you got any plans this week?
Do I have any plans this week? Work, and more work. I have so many blogging things that are just coming out of my ears and my mouth. I just, you know, everything I hear and see is suddenly turned into a young adult cancer issue. So, yeah, lots of writing going on this week.
And, Jack, any plans?
Just to go get my leather outfit for the June 9th show.
Oh, my God. Well, on that note, thank you, Jack Buffard.
You're welcome. Chew on that, people.
It is time for our closing sequence.
Prepare to activate.
I hear there's rumors on the internets.
Have you ever seen a grown man naked?
And so, to all of you, a fond farewell.
Hooray, I'm helping.
You are a meathead.
Oh, Magoo, you've done it again.
That was so terrible, I think you gave me cancer.
All right, folks, that's tonight's show. I hope you had as much fun as we did poking a stick at stupid cancer.
Love.
I'd like to thank our guests, Sage Bolte, Meg Harrison, Karen DeMiro, Marcia Stein, our in-studio live audience, Jill Zocco, Kate Goldberger. Next week, the second part of our pre-OMG Summit Buzz Nation with Bare Naked Ladies frontman Kevin Hearn, who will be closed keynoting and performing at the OMG Cancer Summit, followed by Lindsay Norbeck, founder of Fertile Hope, and Julie Larson from Cancer Care. Sure to be a hell of a show. Same bat time, same bat channel. Remember, if you've missed any of our shows, just listen to the archives at stupidcancershow.com or subscribe to our podcast at itunes.ituy.com. Remember, if it's not stupid, it's not cancer. So we'll see you all back here next week, my friends, live from the Chemo Deck. Jack Buffard, Carol Rosenthal, Captain Stooping, and I wish you all a great evening. Go to bed, Leah.
Fucker out.
On a friendly shore.